you, Brandon. Got it. Well, good morning. Glad to see you this morning. We're going to continue in Galatians chapter 6 this morning. And I want to announce that I'll be leaving for the Appalachian Trail as soon as Robert gets back. If you believe that, you don't know me very well. I do think the idea of being alone for 6 months sounds kind of cool. But that's just... I hear you. I told Rebecca that that when she dies, that's what I'll do. That's how I'll grieve, is I'll go be alone for a long period of time in the woods. And then I'll have a lot to grieve about. Poison ivy and bug bites and whatever else. Oh, it's... Oh, gosh. Maybe you're wondering why I am wearing a backpack, but we'll get to that soon enough. Let's go ahead and jump right into Galatians chapter 6 this morning. I'm going to try to move all my stuff around here so we can get to everything. Galatians chapter 6, and I'll remind you of the context we talked about last week here in a minute. But I think it'll be on the screen here. And we're going to read verses 3 through 6. Of Galatians chapter 6. So it says, "For if anyone considers himself to be something when he is nothing, he is deceiving himself. But each person should examine his own work, and then he will have a reason for boasting in himself alone, and not in respect to someone else," or to someone else, some translations say. "For each person will carry his own load." Verse 6, "The one who is taught the message must share his goods with the teacher." And actually, I want to read verse 6 to you from the New American Standard. I really like this HGSB most of the time, but I don't think it communicates the idea particularly well there. In verse 6, it says, "The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him." This New American Standard I just read out of is more literal, word-for-word translation. So it's going to be important when we get to that passage here. So that's our passage this morning. But I want to remind you of the context we started with last week in verses 1 and 2, that we are to carry one another's burdens. Be careful when somebody falls into sin, as you help them gently be restored, be redeemed back to the family of God and right standing with God and right relationship with God. Be careful that you don't fall into the same sin and then carry one another's burdens. The idea being that it's all about community, that if we are going to live the Christian life, we must do that in relationship and not just cursory, shallow relationships, but in legitimate relationships with other people. We see this in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, like we talked last week. But I want to point out two verses beside each other because there appears to be what a lot of non-Christians, a lot of secular people like to find in the Bible, and that's a contradiction. That seems like the favorite thing of every anti-Christian commentator on the news or whatever, is there's a bunch of contradictions in the Bible. There's contradictions in the Bible. And it appears in our two passages these past 2 weeks, to this week and last week, that we have one of those, and I think it's particularly important this morning that we understand that it's not a contradiction. So the first part of it is in verse 2. Carry one another's burdens. In this way you fulfill the law of Christ. The second one is in verse 5, if you'll flip over there. For each person will carry his own load. So which one is it? Do I carry other people's and thus at times have people help me carry mine? Or do I carry my own? That seems like a bit of a contradiction. And it's not like it's two different passages, it's talking to two different churches. No, this is in the same paragraph of the Bible. Well, carry other people's burdens, but carry your own. So either it's a really weird parenting advice, like, take care of yourself, but then go take care of other people. But don't be helping them too much, because they should be taking care of themselves. Seems kind of odd. So I want to understand this, and I was I realized something about my wife this week, and she helped me come up with this idea to wear a backpack this morning as a visual aid. So most of the cleverness you're going to see here in a second is all her idea. And if you don't like it, it's her fault. So there you go. Can't possibly be my fault. So I have a basket of stuff here, and much like our life, I'm gonna try to carry it here. I got a football and got a Bible. See here, I got a little doll here because I have daughters, and a book. Well, Jane Austen, you know, because I'm high class like that. And got a stuffy. I got some other stuff here. I got it. Don't worry. I got it. No. Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, the baby is naked. Rebecca was like, "You can put some clothes on that thing." I was like, "I think it'd be funnier this way." No, like if you have daughters, none of the babies keep their clothes very long. Not very well. Mark, can you help me out here? I think if I put the stuff in the backpack, I'll be able to carry it. I think I'll be able to do that. So let's try that here. This thing's got a bunch of zippers on it. Let's see here. Let's just put some stuff in here.
All right.
And we'll see if we can fit it all in. This is all very important camping gear. I don't know if you noticed that. Very important to take your snack bars with you. Yeah. And I think, not that I know anything about camping or hiking, and the baby in the front. It's a nice touch. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the help. Oh, I lost my checkbook. That's probably important. Okay. Very good. All right. Now we're good to go. I got all my stuff. I got all my stuff in my bag. I want to point out that was an illustration for you. And it was not a spiritual illustration. It's not like Jesus is Mark and he comes and he lifts my burdens. No, it's very practical. It's a very practical understanding of this passage that this and all the stuff in here, it actually is kind of heavy now, is my load to carry. So we can go to verse 5 again. This is my load to carry. I had to get my mess together. I was trying to carry all of this stuff and keep it under control, but I couldn't. But Mark comes along and he helps me get my mess together, and now I'm able to carry my own load. I've taken care of my responsibilities in that way. This is the first idea that we need to cover when we read verse 5. For each person will carry his own load. I had a mess. Now my mess is together, and I'm able to carry my mess. So that's the first idea that we get to in this responsibility, carry your own load concept. To go further, though, I'm going to need another person to help me out in this analogy. So I've asked Evan if he'll come help me. Give him a hand. It's one of those mornings. And so Evan has some similar stuff to me. He's going to attempt to carry across the stage. And make sure you do just as good as I did. So he's got a lot of stuff to carry. So he has what? No, we'll talk about that in a second. So he has similar things to me that he also has to carry, responsibilities, if you will. His own mess is very similar to my mess, and he's trying to carry it all. And he may very well do that and mess up the illustration. But there we go. He dropped one. That's pretty good. This is a little C.S. Lewis for you. We had to get the Christian author for that one. Hey, he's doing a good job, isn't he? That's good. So now he's struggling with his load. His load is too much for him to carry.
But I'm going to come along, and now I'm going to help him put his mess together, and we're going to get this under control. And we're going to handle these things appropriately. And don't forget the baby in the front. Yeah, that's right. Not around the neck. That's not good. And then checkbook. There you go. And then he's going to put that on the back. And now the load that he couldn't carry, he now can carry. So he's now fulfilling verse 5. So what we see here is the first difference between verse 2 and verse 5. Verse 2 says, carry one another's burdens. And verse 5 says, carry your own load. So what I did was I had Mark help me to get my mess together. And once my mess was together, I was able to carry my own load. Now, maybe Mark taught me some things. Well, this is how you handle this problem, and this is how you be a better husband, and this is how you be a better father, and this is how you get ahead at work, and this is how you handle your garden a little better, and this is how you did this. And maybe he came alongside and said, hey, I'm going to carry some of your struggle this morning, and I'm going to, you know, help you out at your house, or I'm going to mow your yard for you, and I'm going to come do that so you can get some of your mess together. I'm going to take some of that burden off of you, if you will, and I'm going to let you learn how to get your load together. And once, with a little bit of non-laziness, maybe some planning, maybe some character development, maybe some me learning some and growing some and maturing some, eventually I'm now able to carry my own load. Then Evan comes along and he's having similar issues. So what I was able to do then is help Evan carry some load and say, okay, this is what you do as a father, and you need to make sure you get a little bit early up and you can have some time with Jesus. And this is some time management stuff I learned from way back, and I stole all of this from Mark. And this is some things about how you really should, you know, eat a little bit healthier and do this thing and that thing and the other thing, and this is how you handle your money and whatever. And hey, let me watch the kids and you and Emily go have a date night and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now I've assisted him, and he got his mess together, and now he's carrying his load. So this is the first point about verse 5, each one carry his own load, is that once I get my load together, oftentimes with the assistance of somebody else, now I'm able to, first of all, take care of my own responsibilities, but also help the next person in line through what we would call discipleship. We don't have to over-spiritualize this thing. Sometimes discipleship very much is, hey, this is how you parent your child. This is how you, I would say, balance a checkbook. Some of y'all, I don't ever do that. But this is how, yeah, I get some nasty, y'all, some of y'all give me some nasty looks. My money's just fine. Don't you worry about it. It's easy to handle your money when you ain't got none. But it's very practical work in how you handle things, okay? So this is the first difference between load and burden. Because we talked last week about how burdens come, right? It's the newborn baby. It's the passing away of somebody in your family. It's the unexpected accident. It's the sickness, whatever. We understand how to come alongside somebody and help somebody in those extreme or unexpected moments of life and help them carry that burden. When we're talking about load, it's not talking about extreme or unexpected or particularly difficult. It's just talking about your everyday sort of messes that, okay, you're responsible for these things. Thank you, Evan. So that's our first thing. So let's unpack my bag, because I don't want to hold this all day. You're okay. We're going to unpack this bag and see. Can you see me if I get down like this, or do I need to sit on a stool? Can I get it? You're good? Okay, I don't know if that, can you, does the camera see me? Maybe I'll put it on a stool. That might be better. You can sit down on a stool if you like to. That's very good. That's a,
I had to carry my own load, but he helped me with my burden, which was getting off my butt after taking a dent in the brake.
Absolutely. And we're going to get to some of those ideas, but that's a good analogy as well. So let's go through some of these items. I didn't just put random stuff. If you notice, Evan and I had very similar items, and so we're going to go through them and talk about some of what our load looks like. So Mark had to be funny, put our little naked baby on the outside. So we have children, right? So that's a part of your load. That's part of your responsibilities. You got to take care of them. It's time consuming. It's stressful. It wears you out sometimes, but it's obviously worth it. But it's also a load to carry. It's a responsibility you have. Okay, so then we have a football here. I would throw it if I thought my throw or, no. Throw it into the sound booth with the thousands of dollars equipment. That's not, I played Pee Wee and I was on defense, and there's a reason for that. Because I was an angry little child without any skill. I was very good at football. I was good at football. I had a career. I could have gone pro. That's what Pee Wee. You're distracting me. So football here. So it's our family activity. So you do things. It's not just like get up, clothe the children, take the kids to work. Take the kids to school, or do school, and then have lunch, and then do evening time, and make it through the day, and then put them to bed. I mean, that's part of the load of being a parent. But also, you do things. You know, you go on vacation. You teach them, or you teach them how to do the garden, or you're part of raising children as family activities. You're doing some of that stuff too. And then you got a hammer here, so you gotta have a job. Most of us have a job, one version or another, and so you have a job there, some work to do. This is nice. I like Evan's better. He had a bumblebee bear, but this I thought would be a good example of our extended family. You know, a little crazy, a little squishy. That's stuffy there for our extended family. That's a responsibility you have. We have a Bible here, nice kids' Bible on this one, for your spiritual life. So you have a spiritual life. We're going to set that one gently into the basket. So then we had a book. I mentioned I put Pride and Prejudice. I didn't organize these very well. I should have had the very interesting parts in my bag. Sorry. So we need to relax at times. You got mental health you got to worry about. You got to take a break once in a while. So maybe you do that through gardening or sewing or just the book, such a representative of that. Some of y'all don't like to read. You have your physical health. You have a responsibility to take care of your body. It's the temple of God, right? It's a gift of God, and so we're good stewards of those things as well. You got vehicles. Most of us have some sort of vehicle, and that's always a hassle. If you have a house or a car, you have something to fix. And that's what my grandpa used to always say. And so we have a vehicle there. We got a responsibility to that. You got your finances, a little checkbook. It is empty, so don't get any ideas. I told you I don't have any money. But your finances, that's a responsibility you have as a person to take care of that. The guy's shirt's falling off. You have our grown-up doll here this morning. And so he's a spouse. He has a ring on. You can't see it back over there. But your spouse, you have your marriage. That's a responsibility you have. You have to take care of that and put in some effort there. You got some pliers, you got some tools, you got a house to live on, some kind of habitation. Once again, even if you rent, you got, pay your bills and all that sort of thing. I think I got something else. Oh, and then something just as simple.
That's good. That was good timing, God. Thank you.
For the food to come last. Because sometimes something as simple as what we're going to eat tonight is quite a load to bear. Some of y'all know that. Trying to figure out, especially if you have multiple kids, like, okay, what are we going to do tonight, and when's that going to start, and that your husband forgot to thaw out the chicken, the whole thing. So so something as simple as, like, what meals are going to be can sometimes be a load to bear. And that's not to say that these things are negative. I don't want to put a negative connotation, like, oh, it's such a drain to be married to somebody. That's not the point. That's all I'm getting at. But it's that it requires work. It's a responsibility. That's the idea that I'm trying to get to with these items, is that these are all responsibilities. And that gets us to our second real difference, and it comes from the Greek, the difference between carry one another's burdens versus carry your own load is in the original language. And if you notice in this translation, they try to communicate that to an extent. The idea of carry your own load is the idea of your own responsibilities. Notice most of those things are something you have to be responsible for. Someone else can't do it for you.
Something as simple as your own physical health, nobody can do that for you. Nobody can go to the gym for you or decide to eat the salad instead of the cheeseburger. Nobody can do that but you, right? So that's your own responsibility. You have to take care of yourself, and there's a lot of reasons to do that. But then that becomes exacerbated to the more important the issues are, the responsibilities are. So, like, no one else can raise your kids for you. We try as a society to do that. We send them to public schools to be educated, but a lot of times they pick up their values, their worldviews, their cultural mindsets, all from their education. They're spending 8 hours there. If we're not supplementing that, or rather counteracting that oftentimes at home, then that's a problem. Now, maybe you say, well, I'm homeschooled. Okay, that's good. But then we try to do that with churches a lot of times, right? We try to send our kids to church and let the youth pastor, let the pastor, let the children's worker, they're going to teach them about Jesus. They're going to teach them about the Bible. They're going to teach them morality and those sort of values. But isn't that our job? A couple hours in children's church or a youth group is not going to create in them a love and a connection with Jesus like we're supposed to instill in our children. If you look at Deuteronomy chapter 6, when they rise up and when they go to sleep and when we go along the way, that we have these conversations and we're pointing them and we're educating them, we're training theology and values and culture and character. All that happens in a discipleship manner. You're discipling your children. And Jesus lived with his disciples and did all of that. So we can't farm out or hire somebody else to raise our kids for us. I mean, you can, but then they become the kids' parents in a very real way instead of ourselves. Now, that's not to say you have to homeschool your children. That's not to say that you can't have babysitters or anything like that. But the idea is that that is a responsibility we as parents have to take on. The same thing with your spouse. Nobody else can be my wife's spouse for me. I have to put in that work. I have to show that love. I have to be caring, concerning. If I had a personal assistant, which I've often dreamed of, that if I had a personal assistant and they ordered my wife flowers, at some point she's going to figure that out. And she's not going to be all that encouraged by the flowers she gets anymore, is she? Oh, my! Your personal assistant remembered it was my birthday. That's not me anymore. Now our marriage is struggling because I haven't put in the effort to be in that relationship. Nobody else can do that for me. It's my responsibility. And you think about, okay, what about your house and the car and the food? You mentioned that stuff. You can buy all that stuff, yes. But at some level, I have to do that. I have to hire the contractor. I have to pick out the house. I have to, you know, take the car to the shop, whatever the case is. These are responsibilities that we have. And when I don't take responsibility for the things in my life I'm supposed to be a steward of and be caregiver of and to be doing, then it becomes a strain on everybody around me that may try to help me, or I'm just ineffective in a lot of different ways, spiritually ineffective. Obviously, the biggest example in our responsibilities are spiritual life. No one else can be connected with Jesus for you. No one else can get you saved. You know, there's a thought in Catholicism that we can, like, pray people out of purgatory. And it used to be, you know, they charged money. That was part of the whole Protestant Reformation thing, is that they were charging a bunch of money. Oh, if you just give a little bit more money, your loved one's going to be out of purgatory. You can't do that. It's a personal relationship with Jesus. And so these are responsibilities we have, and so you have to carry that own load yourself. But the idea of burdens are life difficulties. Life difficulties that I might need help carrying. And so quickly, Brandon was my backup just in case Evan couldn't do it, because I thought Evan was good because he has a family. And he has a few more loads, I think, than Brandon does. I'm not sure. He might be carrying a lot back there. I'm not sure, but Evan is my example this morning, and so sometimes we have these big things come up in life. You know, you want to show them how big this is, and you have big things. You know, I don't want to hurt my back. So we have things that come up in life. Don't do it too good. Oh, man. And so we have these things come up in life that sometimes you need a little bit of help to carry move it all the way as far as we can so I can still see my notes. That's good. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's good. It is. It is. He's doing a great job. So sometimes it's a big thing in life that we literally need someone else to help us carry. You know, it's the newborn baby. It's the unexpected death. It's the sickness. It's that sort of thing. And we're pretty good at doing that. But in thinking about this reality, I realize that we're not all so good. And we talked about this a lot last week, so I won't harp on this too much. But this is the idea of burdens, carrying someone else's burdens. We talked a lot about the load aspects, and that's your responsibility, oftentimes things that you have to carry that no one else can literally carry for you. But we're talking about burdens that come along, these life difficulties that oftentimes are big, the unexpected, the extreme, right? Well, we talked about that last week, like I said, but I realized that what we do as Christians is we front load and forget. We front load and forget. So someone has a new baby and they have 17 casseroles and, you know, a mountain of diapers, and then 6 months later when all the diapers are gone and the casseroles have all spoiled, no one's there. My grandmother read a book when my grandfather passed. She got married when she was 16, so she, like, didn't know life without grandpa, right? And she read a book by a local lady, and I haven't read the book, and I don't really know the lady, and so I'm not endorsing it at all, but I'm just going to tell you the title because I think the title's quite apropos. And the title was When Casseroles Cease. And the idea is that, like, and they mentioned it yesterday at Max's mother's funeral, that when the people that surround the incident, our lives go back to normal. But for the people who, whatever happened, with the newborn baby or the death in the family or the sickness, those people are still living with the pain. They're still living with the struggle. They're still living with the burden. And what we do oftentimes as Christians is we front load and then we forget about the struggle that person's having. And it's because we don't have real community with them. You wouldn't forget about your brother or sister or your kid or your spouse having trouble. You wouldn't forget about that, not if you were close to them at all. But we do it all the time in the church. So what we really should be doing is carrying that burden with them until the situation changes. Until the baby's old enough that it's not so difficult anymore. Until the pain, though it may never subside in losing somebody, has subsided enough that they can go on about life and so on and so forth. So we understand perhaps the big burden issue, and we understand how that's different than carrying our own load. But Evan, if you'll hold that one. So that's not a backpacking sleeping bag. Can you verify that, Evan?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. That's a Chick-fil-A opening sleeping bag. In Chick-fil-A opening, you want comfort, not lightness. Not worried about lightness, you want comfort. You're sleeping on asphalt. It's not good. You can step over this way. I think you're out of the screenshot. So would you like to carry that for a few thousand miles up the trail, up your proverbial life journey? No, probably not. But can we all agree that if you're going camping or whatever you use these backpacks for, I don't know, you probably want some sort of sleeping apparatus, right? A sleeping bag or one of them little mats they roll out. It baffled me. Robert, who's on the Appalachian Trail, I don't know, like a couple months in, maybe not even that, he decided to get rid of his tent. He said that was too much of a burden. He got rid of his tent. I don't know how he's been sleeping in the middle of the woods for the past 6 months, but it's without a tent. That is not okay. Like, I barely can sleep in a Motel 6. There ain't no way I'm sleeping outside underneath a tarp. That ain't me. I mean, I could do it if, like, zombies attack, but that's about it. That's, if we're in literal life and death situation, I could do it. I'm not that sissy. But Evan's carrying this load for a long time. And though it's absolutely something that we want to get into his back at some point, it's something he needs, it's a responsibility he has, having something to sleep on, it's heavy. It's heavy. And so what I might do in order to carry his burden, even though this is hopefully a load responsibility, is I might come in and say, Evan, can I help you carry that for a few steps? And so I do that for him, and I carry that for a little while, and then I give it back to him. Because it's his responsibility. You know, it's his bed. He needs to carry it. And so maybe over time, he builds up some strength, or his backpack gets bigger, whatever, however you want to, you know, extrapolate out this analogy. Maybe the sleeping bag gets lighter. The situation changes, and now he's able to take that on as part of his everyday load. But until then, seasons of life, I'm carrying this. So I could think of a few instances where in my life this has happened. So certainly now we're experiencing that with four children and all that sort of thing. Some of y'all know exactly what that's like. But perhaps let's step back a minute and go when Vivian was in the hospital. So Vivian's in the hospital. I have no emotional, mental, nothing, potentially financial. It's scary at that point. Nothing left. There's no room in my backpack for any of that. Caring for and loving my child, regardless of whatever medical issue she may have, is going to be part of my load. And there may be some things in here that got to get lightened up. Maybe my physical health goes out the window a little bit. Maybe my relaxation goes out the window a little bit. Maybe family activities are changed and they get a little bit lighter. You know, this is an analogy, stick with me here, to make room in my bag for this new aspect of our life. Now, praise the Lord, she's better, and that's not really changed a whole lot in our lives. But sitting in the hospital crying your eyes out, all of that's out the window. There's no room in the bag for that. And Anthony and Ellen come, and my parents come, and Rebecca's grandparents come, and several of y'all come. I remember the Cheeks came like just for like 2 minutes. Like, you just drove all the way to Winston-Salem. They spent much more time driving than they did actually being able to be there. But the point was that they came, and what they provided was not Chick-fil-A, like some people, was not, finances or whatever like that. They provided the emotional and spiritual care that we needed. And so the point being that there's a lot of different things in those situations that may look a whole lot like a really too heavy sleeping bag. And somebody might carry this strap, and somebody might carry that strap, and whatever. And then eventually they leave, and we learn to take on our own burdens, our own load, I should say. They lighten that burden in that moment. And so that's the second difference, is that this is responsibilities. These are burdens. And sometimes they're big, extreme, or unexpected things, and sometimes they're things that don't quite fit in our load yet. Thank you, Evan. You can have a seat, I think, with your family even. You can't keep any of that stuff. None of that stuff is mine. It's all children. Well, the tools are mine. The rest of it's children's, and Will actually let me borrow the backpacks because, you know, I don't own them. So let's go back, if I can find my place. Hey, I'm right on my notes. Very good. I even have a little arrow that says sit at that point. Very good. So let's go back to verse 3, because remember we started in verse 3, we read through verse 6, and let's understand the first two verses. Because sometimes Paul's writings in particular seem to be, or the epistles in particular seem to be, this haphazard collection of, well, there's this thing and there's this thing, and they're very list-like sometimes. Excuse me. But I find that if you'll marinate in the Scripture and really understand the passage, I find it really happens a lot when you start to memorize Scripture. And I don't think it's necessarily all that much that it's memorized as much as you've just meditated on it. You've thought about it that much more. And you begin to see connections between verses. So I'm a big believer in memorization of Scripture. I'm not very good at it, but I am a very big believer in it. And I particularly believe in memorizing passages of Scripture, not just individual verses. Individual verses are great, but once you begin to understand and memorize passages, you begin to unlock a lot of the connections between those verses that we miss sometimes reading them. So this seems like sort of just a listy point, you know, do this and do this and do this other thing. But when we begin to understand this passage in light of the burden concept and the load concept and the broader idea of community with one another, we begin to see why these verses are significant for this context. So we start in verse 3 to understand these. For if anyone considers himself to be something when he is nothing, he is deceiving himself. Now this is harsh language. Paul writes harshly to make a point oftentimes. Or I should say God writes through Paul to make a point more accurately. Harshly sometimes. And the reason being is because it's easy for us when I'm helping Evan pack his bag and when I'm carrying his sleeping bag for him and when I'm helping him carry this bench for him, it's easy for me to think about how great I am. Oh, look at me. I'm helping Evan out. Poor little Evan. Bless his heart. You know, he just can't take it. He just can't take it at all, and I'm just going to help him out. And, you know, I wouldn't say it to anybody else, but I'm a pretty good person. It's really easy to let that sort of pride seep in when you're helping people. And that's the warning here. If anyone considers himself something when he's nothing. Keep in mind, it just said, carry one another's burdens. If anyone thinks he's something but he's nothing, he deceives himself. The point is that not that you're nothing, but the point is that we are not perfect. We are not great. It's God working through us to meet one another's needs in the community of faith. And so it's a warning against pride and ego and arrogance. As we help other people, we do it humbly through the power of the Lord and through the blessings He's given us, oftentimes because someone else, like Mark helped me, someone else came before and helped me, and now I pass on that to somebody else. See, that ought to be humbling, but oftentimes we forget how many people helped us to where we are, and we just think, you know, I'm pretty good off. But then we go to the next passage, the next verse, and it really seems like, oh, it's just a reiteration of this pride idea, but it's really emphasizing something else. But each person should examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in himself alone and not respect for someone else. Certainly this is one of the means by which we head off pride and egotism. But what it's saying is that you've got to do self-evaluation. Keep in mind, okay, verse 1 it says, hey, when you're helping somebody else that's caught in sin, be careful not to let yourself stumble into the same sin. And then carry one another's burdens. And then wait a second. Don't get caught up in pride thinking you're better than somebody else just because you're helping them. And then, okay, wait a second now, but do some self-evaluation. See where you're at. And when you see good things where God has brought you from where you used to be to where you are, I used to be flat broke and now I have money to be generous with people. I used to be addicted to this issue and now I'm not addicted anymore. I used to really be a prideful person, but now I'm really proud of my humility. So you come out of those, things and you do a self-evaluation and go, you know what? God has brought me a long way. And God has put me in a position through using other people and through using His Spirit and through maturing me over time that I can go and help somebody else. That is good. And then you don't stop with going, man, I'm really good. No, you stop with, thank you, Lord. It's an opportunity for gratitude. It's an opportunity for gratitude as you evaluate yourself. And then you boast about it. You've got, God, thank you so much. You've done so much for me. And I'm in a great place now, and that's a wonderful thing. And you've given me this wonderful family, and you've given me good finances, and you give me good health, and you really put me in a great position, and I'm able to help other people. And you boast about that to Jesus, really, is the idea. You know, in yourself, fine, but the idea is that you don't go around and tell other people, you know, my finances are doing great. God's really blessed me. I'm able to buy the jet this year. You know, that's not really of Jesus. That's not what Jesus would do. So when we brag about some of these things, we really got to examine our own selves, do a self-evaluation, and then examine our motives. It's really sticky. Because a lot of times we want people to celebrate this good thing in our life with us, but sometimes that wanting people to celebrate with us turns into wanting to brag about what we have. And it's a fine line, and it's a motive issue, and that becomes very sticky. It's a very, very sticky thing in that. And Jesus addresses that a lot in his teaching about how the heart, the outside can be perfect in human eyes at least, and the heart be wicked and you're still wicked. That we can do the right things for the wrong reasons and it's still wrong. And so that's the idea here, self-evaluation, and then we can celebrate that in Jesus, but not to brag to other people. Then we get to the verse 5, for each person should carry his own load. Each person should take care of their own household, you might say. Each person should be responsible for their own responsibilities. And sometimes that takes someone else helping me, discipling me in how to get all that stuff, all my mess together and get it all in the bag so I can carry it. And sometimes there are seasons like the bag or like something extreme where someone is literally helping me carry my burden. So this is the difference of burden and load. So then we go to verse 6, and we got to understand this, because you read this passage and you go, why is that? He just throws that in there. I mean, if any preacher just threw that verse 6 in there, you'd be like, man, he's just trying to get a paycheck. He's just trying to get a paycheck. But verse 6 makes a lot of sense when you start thinking about burdens and loads and community. Verse 6, the one who was taught the message must share his goods with the teacher. That's a little bit too simplified. Verse 6 in a more word-for-word translation in ASB, the one who was taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. If you read in that translation, you think, I'll cut him a check. Cut him a check. He went to school and he preaches a sermon and he does a funeral when we need him to. Cut him a check. But that's not the idea. It says share all good things with the person who teaches you. There's a few different aspects of this historically that really need to be addressed before we can go any deeper. Paul says stuff like that. You might have heard like the don't muzzle the ox thing. Laborers worthy of their wages. These sort of verses, they're throughout the Bible several times. Yet Paul, being an example of sort of a ministry leader, doesn't often take a check. He's bivocational. He's a tent maker, you might know. Excuse me, I got a little cough this morning. But I don't think this verse is talking about just cut him a check. It doesn't make sense in context. It's talking about community. It's talking about burdens. It's talking about loads. And then, by the way, cut this person a check. Think about this. Most of the teaching that would have been done early church would not have been this. It would not have been mass gatherings of enough people to pool enough extra money in tithes and offerings, if you will, to cut somebody a check. The idea of a purely vocational minister in the early church was very rare. Guys like Paul would have gotten a check when they showed up. Guys like Peter and Timothy eventually probably did get most of their financial means via the church. But the church was organized and structured very differently than it is today. It would have been, most of your teaching would have been done in discipleship type environments where you have one person teaching or discipling, better word there, discipling two or three. And so discipling involves teaching, it involves accountability, it involves burden carrying, it involves mentorship, it involves a lot of these different aspects, but teaching is absolutely one of them. They would have gathered in larger groups, house to house. Many of our, many of our epistles to specific churches say, well, say hello to or whatever else to the church that meets in such and such house, the church that meets in such and such house. The difference between house churches today and house churches back then, at least in America, is that most house churches in America are started by people who had their underpants all knotted up and they left the church because no church is right. And we're just going to do it at home. The problem is, I haven't met a home church person yet that actually fulfills the plurality and the fullness of what a church is supposed to be biblically. Plurality of elders, different giftings, various responsibilities of essentials of church. What it often looks like is somebody's kid plays guitar and somebody's wife sings and then somebody gets really angry about a verse. It's been my experience. Now, maybe you've experienced different, but this is a difference when we're talking about home churches, because those home churches were part of a larger network. Now, I've heard of home church networks, particularly like in Korea and stuff. There are some people in America that's doing that. And I suppose if you have enough of a network and enough people working together and that sort of thing, you may fulfill the essentials of what it means to be a church via that network, very much like they would have done back then. It wouldn't have been just the church at I can't remember any of the names now in the Bible, but let's just say the church at Mark's house. It's not just a church at Mark's house being the only right church and everybody else being wrong, and then our home church is existing as a church. No, not really. Because Mark's church would have hung out with Evan's church, would have hung out with Anthony's church, and then we would have done things together, and we would have fulfilled community together, and we would have done different things together, and we would have cared for each other, and we just so happened to gather more regularly at Mark's house or Evan's house or Anthony's house. You understand? So this is the difference in structure they had back then. I bring all that up to say a handful of people in a home church where they get most of their teaching from a person there, or in discipleship relationships where there's only two or three people, would not have been enough people to vocationally support an individual. Why do I bring all that up? Because this is about community. It's not about cutting a check for some preacher. I can say that because y'all will cut me a check later, right? Just kidding. That's not funny, really. But the point of this is not the check thing. And maybe we could go to the laborers worthy of wages and the don't muzzle an ox thing. We could talk about cutting a check or something like that. The reality of it is that we as people of a community are to care for one another and meet one another's needs. It says in Acts that no one had a need among them. That also meant the preacher. The reason it brings it up here after carry his own load is that the person who's taking on the responsibility of teaching amongst the community of faith has taken on a special load, has taken on a special burden, and they can't give it to anybody else. They've accepted a call, if you will, from God, and it's not that it's any better or any worse or any more important than other giftings in the body, okay? The teaching is not more important, but the teacher has a higher responsibility. They will stand before God and give an account for what it is they've taught. So they better be right when they say it. They carry that weight of having a big influence on whoever they're teaching spiritual life. This is a burden for them. And I want to go to Hebrews chapter 13, and I know this has been long, but and we're ending with a more dry part, I should say. But it says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Okay, so that's kind of what I just talked about. I'm not going to worry about the obey part. That's not what we're getting at. So that they can do this with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. And some passages even use the term burden, that you would help with their burden. Let me go to Galatians. I didn't want to spend $20 extra to get another translation in the back. So that's why we're doing it this way this morning. Hebrews. I have a hard time finding that one. 13. 17. In this version, I think, is a little better. Obey your leaders and submit to them. Keep watch over your souls as those will give account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. That is the same thing. That's crazy. Okay, one of them says burden. I'm forgetting which one. Just go with me. The point being, let's go back to verse 6. The point being that we as people help to carry the burden and lighten the load of the person that's doing the teaching. The one who has taught the message must share all good things with the teacher. All good things with the teacher. So let's just throw out a few ideas. Is a good meal a good thing? Yeah. Yeah. Is, like, family camaraderie, is that a good thing? Yeah, I think so. Is, like, skills and ability that you have that someone else don't have, is that a good thing? Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. What about your spiritual growth? Is that a good thing? If it's a good teacher, they will be encouraged when they find out that some of the people they're helping to teach are growing. So when something happens in your life, share that good thing with some of the people that are walking with you, including the person that's teaching. Share all good things with the teacher. And in this way, you help them to lighten their burden. You make it profitable for yourself because they're being able to care for you and serve the Lord well better. So the band can come if they can make it around all of my props this morning. And I just want to bring it back to Jesus. I know we haven't talked a whole lot about Jesus and God and deep theology this morning. It's a very practical concept that I get help and carry my own responsibilities, that I have responsibilities I'm for, and then I help other people when they have things that they're struggling to carry. Regardless of whether I think that's their load or their burden, their life difficulty or their own responsibility, I help them carry that. I am conscious of not getting prideful. I'm evaluating myself for my own growth and celebrating that in myself with Jesus. But I want to point us to Jesus because Jesus did these things, obviously, better than anybody else. And so I think about the woman caught in adultery. When we think about these burdens and loads, and we think about money, and we think about food, and we think about fixing the car, and we think about all these really practical and tangible things. But I don't want us to miss that carrying someone else's burden and the load that we have to carry is often not always a tangible or physical thing. It's emotional, it's mental, it's spiritual. And so Jesus comes and lightens this lady's burden, or they bring this lady to him, and he lightens her burden. He tells her she's forgiven. Now, he addresses the people trying to hurt her and all that sort of thing too. But he meets her spiritual need. Now, we can't do that. We can help people get to Jesus and that sort of thing. We can't do what Jesus did there. We can't forgive somebody's sins. But he meets her spiritual need. We could help someone have their spiritual need met. We can lead them through the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. We can present to them the reality that God loves them enough to die for their sins, that they are separated from God regardless of what they might feel in the moment, how great life might be going. They are separated from God, and we can assist someone in that burden of a spiritual life that is darkened and dead, or a mental life that is confused and depressed, or an emotional life that's run out of patience and is angry. We can help them find the cures to that, and the cures to that is Jesus. So Jesus meets this woman's spiritual need, and then he calls her to carry her own load. He doesn't say, okay, now I'm going to hang out with you the rest of your life and make sure you don't sin again. No, he says, go live your life, go carry your load, and don't sin anymore. This is your responsibility to take care of. I've forgiven you. I've brought you back to zero. You are free to go. And now you go carry your load. Get your mess together. Put it in a backpack. You're clean slate now. And go. Jesus does this better than anybody else. So when it comes to carrying our own load, I told you this is not a spiritual analogy. It's a practical, it's a tangible analogy. But it's very spiritual as well. As the song says, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. When my mess isn't all in the backpack, my first stop even shouldn't be the church. It should be Jesus. It should be prayer. It should be the power of the Holy Spirit. And then, no doubt, He will bring people from the community to help me. But it begins with Jesus. And when my burden is too much to bear, it begins with Jesus. Jesus is our example and He's our help. Praise the Lord. Thank you.